Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Atta purvavadeva prayojanam cha spashtayitum purvoktasya purna purushasya cha shi krishna swarupatvam vyanjayatum grantav pala nirdesha dwara tatra tad anubhavantaram anubhava antaram pratipadayan aha yasyamiti. To elucidate again the final goal, prayojana, in the same way as before, and to indicate the essential identity of Sri Krishna, previously mentioned as the complete Purusha, Suta Goswami speaks the verse beginning Yasyam. This verse, by mentioning the benefits to be achieved by hearing from the Bhagavatam, describes another of Sri Lavyasadeva's realizations. Okay, again, reminder, the class starts at 10 o'clock. At 9 o'clock, not 5 after, 10 after, 15 after. At 9 o'clock sharp. And half the devotees are not here. Commentary. Srimad Bhagavatam teaches that unalloyed love for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the true purpose of the soul's existence. Prema Bhakti eclipses the importance of liberation and ignores the attractions of material success and knowledge. Although Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha and the many incarnations of Lord Vishnu are also objects of pure devotion, the higher aspects of Prema Bhakti center around the loving exchanges shared by Krishna and his devotees in his most intimate abode, Sri Vrindavan. Vyasadeva also saw in his trance this prayojana. Then that is the verse that is mentioned in this first sentence of the Anuchid. Yasyam vai shriyamanayam krishne paramapuruṣe Bhaktir Utpadyate Pungsa Shoka Moha Bayapaha. When one simply gives all reception to this Vedic scripture, the feeling for loving devotional service to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fear. It's a short commentary. I'll move on to 47.2. Bhakti prema shravana rupaya sadhana bhaktiya sadhyatvat. The realization is that bhakti is pure love of God. I think that's a mistake. I think what we're talking about is bhakti was sadhana bhakti in the previous verse. No, not like that. Wait a second. I hear what Jiva Goswami is doing is glossing bhakti as prema lakshana bhakti. And the translation doesn't convey that properly. It's not that just he realized that bhakti is pure love of God. No. Bhakti here means pure love of God, and that's what he saw. And it develops through the practice of devotional service in the form of hearing. And that other verse, Anarto Pashamam Sakshad Bhakti Yoga Mithalksaje. There bhakti meant, bhakti yoga meant sadhana bhakti. Now, in the subsequent verse, the very next verse, Yasyam Vaishriyamanaya. Bhakti, the word bhakti is used again, but this time in the sense of prema bhakti. Okay, continuing. Utpadyate avir bhavati. Tasyanu shangikam gunam aha. Atrai shoketi. Atrai sham samskaro pi nashyati ti bhavaha. Pritirnayavan mai vasudeve. Namuchyate deha yogena tavat. Iti shri Rishabhava deva akvakyat. The word utpadyate sprouts up, means becomes manifest. The phrase, quote, which distinguishes the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fear, describes a side effect of prema bhakti, in which even the subtlest traces of inauspicious feelings disappear. Anushangikam gunam, a side effect. Sri Rishabhadev affirms this when he says, therefore, until one has love for Lord Vasudev, who is none other than myself, one is certainly not delivered from having to accept a material body again and again. Commentary. Prema is the spontaneous ecstatic urge of the soul to fulfill the desires of the Supreme Person. It is the soul's original and natural disposition. Nothing else can properly be called love. A heart contaminated by material desires, to the contrary, can know only lust. Prema bhakti need not be created nor implanted from without, because it is always present, dormant in every jiva. Nitya siddha Krishna prema shadya kabu noi. Shravanadi shuddha chitte koraye udai. Pure love for Krishna is certainly established in the hearts of the living entities. It is not something to be gained from another source. When the heart is purified by hearing and chanting, this love naturally awakens. Fully realized Vaishnavas throughout history, Shukadev Sutta and others in ancient times, Jayadeva Kavi and others in more recent centuries, and countless devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all knew the meaning of pure love of God. They knew the transcendental taste of hearing and chanting the holy names of Krishna. Many more aspiring Vaishnavas have followed the guidance of these great devotees and have discovered the natural attraction of Krishna consciousness. Because the teachings of the pure Vaishnavacharyas are still being spread without compromise in an unbroken tradition by sincere devotees of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness throughout the world, future generations will be able also to taste this real satisfaction. As long as a single person is faithfully practicing and working to spread the sublime instructions of Srimad Bhagavatam, hope still exists for peace and happiness. Okay, there's another piece of the Anucheda, 47.3. Paramapuruṣe, those phrases again in this verse. Purvokta Purnapuruṣe. Kimakari ityapekshayam aha Krishne. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Ityadi Shastra Sahasra Bhavitantak Tadananam Paramparaya Tatrasiti Madhyapatinam Chasankya Lokanam Tannama Shravanamatrena Yak Pratama Pratiti Vishayaksyat Tata Tannam Nak Patamakshara matram mantraya kalpyamanam yasyabhi mukhyaya syat tadakare ityartaha ahuscha nama kaumudi karaha Krishna Shabdasya Tamala Shyamala Twishi Yashodaya Stanandaye Parabrahmani Rudhi Iti. The word Parama Purusha, for the Supreme Person, for the Supreme Purusha, refers to the previously mentioned complete Purusha, Param Purusham Param. In what form does he appear? Purusham Purnam, it was the reading. In what form does he appear? As stated, he appears as Krishna. There are countless persons whose hearts are immersed in contemplation on thousands of scriptural statements such as Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. But Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. Or who subscribe to the same opinion, having gleaned it through the authority of disciplic succession. For all these persons, Krishna becomes the most immediate object of perception as soon as they merely hear his name. Indeed, a mantra including even just the first syllable of his name evokes interest in him. The Purusha appears in that form of Krishna. In the words of the author of Nama Komadi, Srinath Chakravarti, Bhagavan Nama Komadi, the word Krishna, whose meaning is established by convention, is a name of the Supreme Brahman, whose complexion is dark blue like a tamala tree, and who sucks the breast of Mother Yashoda. Commentary. According to traditional Sanskrit linguistics, a conventional name is a name whose meaning is not grammatically derived, but simply accepted. Lakshmidhara Pandit, in his Bhagavan Nama Komadi, cited by Lord Chaitanya himself as authoritative, gives the opinion that Krishna is such a conventional name. There is no need to look for its esoteric derivation or mystic significance, because it simply refers to the son of Mother Yashoda. And if any confusion remains because the name Yashoda is common in India, Sri Lakshmidhara further spells out that this Krishna, the son of Yashoda, happens to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So not some other Yashoda Mataji. This is the original Yashoda and her original son. I'm sorry, I misidentified. I said it was Srinath Chakravarti. He wrote the Chaitanya Mata Manjusha. This is Lakshmidhara. The book is cited by Lord Chaitanya. The book was written before Lord Chaitanya. This is actually the Prayojana. This is actually what Jiva Goswami is trying to teach us. He's taking an analytic approach, a philosophical approach. His language is more philosophical than poetic in this book. He's written also the Gopal Champu, which is pure poetry. And he's giving arguments to convince those who don't have full faith. So you could say that the Sandarbhas are for people who don't have Nishta. That has been said. People who haven't already become firmly fixed in Krishna consciousness, they particularly need this philosophical clearing of all doubts and misunderstandings. That said, still the Sandarbhas, it's being written by Jiva Goswami, not some mundane logician. His aim is to awaken love of God. The purpose of all the Sandarbhas, even though they bring us up from the lowest levels through philosophical discussion, still, the aim of it, the goal that is meant to be achieved by studying the Sandarbhas, is to come to the Prayojana, pure love of Krishna. Okay, is there any discussion? Yes.
I have two questions. It seems that this verse is also describing the Abhideya, because you hear the Bhagavatam, that's how you develop love of God.
Oh, yes. It's describing how the Prayojana comes from the Abhideya.
Yes.
I mean, in this sequence of verses, we're describing the sadhana bhakti. Not bhakti falls out of the sky and hits you on the head, but you do something to practice, to develop it. Vaganuga bhakti is also sadhana bhakti. The sadhana of thinking about Radha and Krishna, remembering their pastimes, that's also sadhana. There is devotion that just happens by causeless mercy on someone who doesn't do any sadhana, but that's not what Vyasadeva was looking at in his trance. He was looking at sadhana bhakti and its development into prema bhakti. Prema bhakti coming from sadhana bhakti, not prema bhakti just coming spontaneously. That's, you know, he could have seen that, but that's not what he saw. He was looking at something at this. So the two are connected. In this context, they're connected. The sadhana leading to the prayojana.
It's pure prema bhakti. So I'm just trying to recap. The sambandha from these four or five verses.
Yeah.
I think five verses. Well, we've seen four so far. Is that the sambandha is described as Krishna in his energy, maya, in the living entities. And then
implied are the internal energy and the living entities. They're not mentioned, but we can presume when Krishna is there, they'll be there also.
And how he's above material energy. And we're bewildered.
Why is it significant?
The jiva is mentioned.
Yes.
Samohito jiva.
Yeah, he's mentioned, right?
Yeah.
The next verse, second verse.
So go ahead.
Why is it significant that Krishna is above maya? So what?
Because he can... Devi Yesha Gunamahi. You can that shows also the Abhideya, that by that verse, by this logic of Divei Shagunamai, is that he's above Maya, therefore if we surrender to him, we'll become free from Maya.
Okay, what you're assuming, because it's so obvious, but we can say it, is that another part of the Sambandha is that we're in Maya. Well, because we're in Maya, we need a sadhana.
It says Samohi
Tojivo. Yeah, you're right, you repeat it, but we can point it out in part of our analysis. That the other part of the situation is the Supreme Lord is control of Maya, controller, free from her effects, but we aren't free from her effects. And because of her covering us, therefore we need some deliverance. We need a means to get out of the predicament.
And then the Abhideya is Bhakti Yoga.
Yes.
Dokshaji.
Which means practice, regulated practice.
And then also he's... Then also in that same verse, it compiled the Bhagavatam to relieve people from that.
Then the Bhagavatam is... Studying the Bhagavatam is part of the sadhana.
It's part of the sadhana. And then the goal of the sadhana is described in this verse, which is Krishna Bhakti, Prema Bhakti, the highest...
Yes.
The devotion to Krishna.
Chitraketu Prabhu. We have a few devotees who are not here in the class. I see them walking around. Could you inquire... Why they're not coming to the class? I mean, don't force anybody, but they may have good reasons. Exam is exam. We have a program, even with the exams. We should.
Since all the first years.
It's sutra fever.
All the first years students are not near me.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Anyway, I just asked them to ask everybody. If they say that, okay.
I have a question. You said that the word Krishna has a conventional meaning, and we know from Mahabharata that famous verse that actually it has a derivation, Krish and Na.
Yes.
So how to...
Sometimes derivations are given scientifically that actually, you know, are coming from proper application of grammatical rules. And sometimes there are poetic derivations given that really don't follow the rules. They're just, you know, there's some analogy there. But like Kri and Shna, what is Kri supposed to mean in that analysis?
Krish means to attract and Na Ananda.
What does it mean?
To attract.
To attract. Okay, Krish can mean to attract, but Na? Bhuvachaka is what the verse says. How Krish means Bhu, that's a little hard to see. But that's coming, that's the... Vishnu Purana speaking, Parashara Muni. Anyway, in that case, it's not the ordinary, you know, understanding that a grammarian would have of the derivation of the word, if there is a derivation. It's something added from poetic inspiration. It's not to be taken too exactly literally. You know, you can give fanciful and poetic interpretations of syllables that aren't actually the way the word was actually derived grammatically. So those derivations help us get insight and they inspire us, but they shouldn't be taken as strictly scientific. I even think Parashara's analysis of the syllables kriya and shna in that case would also be not exactly grammatical. Not, they're not invalid, but they shouldn't be, you know, they're on a different level. They're on a more poetic level. Yes. So, I mean, you know, the word has to be one or the other. We might have different opinions, but I don't think in this case we have opposing opinions about whether it's conventional or derivational. It's not really derivational, but we're giving a fanciful, you know, poetic kind of derivation, but it's not really derived. Yes. Okay. Right.
We just recently we studied from Jiva Goswami that there are Rudha, Yoga Rudha, and Yogika. So we can say that it's not Yogika, but Yoga Rudha, is it correct?
Well, that is special words. It's actually not that one word is derived and conventional at the same time. That's usually in a compound where you have, you know, the individual word may be conventional, but the combination may be derived. Like the word Pankaja. Pankaja can be understood derivationally, because you have a suffix added to panka. So pankaja means, derivationally, means born out of mud. And tadpoles, baby frogs, are born out of mud. A poet might use the word pankaja to refer to the baby frogs, the tadpoles. But the normal usage of pankaja is to refer conventionally to a lotus. So that compound word, pankaja, which has the suffix ja, the derivational suffix, but the actual usual meaning of it is conventional. There's so many things born out of mud, but we're talking just about lotuses. You know, some kind of weed can also grow out of the mud, but we're not talking about that when we call it pankaja. So that is a word that's both conventional in one aspect and derivational in another. But it's a compound word. If you have a simple word, it has to be one or the other. It can't be both. Krishna is two syllables, but it's not a compound word. It's one simple word. So it has to be either conventional or derivational. It can't be both at the same time. So it's not a compound. Yes. I'm sorry. Bartram, and then
You said that all this poetic analysis given by Parashara and so on, they're not supposed to be taken as scientifically true. But even in the Vedic scriptures, like I was looking up this word Purusha, and then if you go through the Upanishads, there are so many different kinds of, which may sound poetic, meanings given of Purusha.
Where do you see that?
In Brihadaranyaka, Chandogya, there are
Brahmanas or in Aranyakas?
Brihadaranyaka.
Yes.
Like there are many.
Oh, the Upanishad, yes.
Yeah, in Upanishads. There are many meanings like which sound poetic.
Yes.
But just like, I would like to draw an analogy between that and this. Like we say Krishna, he being God, he doesn't have any father and mother. But still, when he has a father and mother, it's more a higher reality than even...
Yes.
Even just like that, these poetical meanings that are expressed in the Shastras, can't we take it as actually really more true? Because they actually give us inspiration.
So you're saying the words, although the grammarians say they're conventional, they're really derivational? In a transcendental sense, maybe, but I don't know if that's the opinion of Vaishnava scholars. Actually, it's simpler. Just let them be one or the other, and yeah, if the word Krishna is conventional, it doesn't shake our faith. That's okay. Yeah, but let it be conventional, and then we can also impose poetically, you know, a kind of derivation on top of that. So, you know, it's okay. On different levels, both can be true. Yes. The danger of letting it be derivational is that everybody goes to town coming up with their fanciful derivations. If you cut the debate short by saying it's not conventional anyway, so let's not have everybody come up with a different derivation. Let Parashara say what he wants to say, but at least every single, you know, amateur grammarian doesn't have to also be allowed to come up with a derivation for Krishna. Yeah.
Our acharyas give.
Yes. Yes. And that's entertaining, and sometimes it insightful and inspiring, but it doesn't have to be taken with literal seriousness when you have a fanciful fanciful derivation.
Our acharyas also give a derivational meaning for the word Rama in Hare Krishna Mahamantra, though it has a conventional meaning of Lord Ram as Ramachandra in incarnation.
Yes. Yes.
But we understand when we are chanting that Rama is Radham Ramyate, something like that. Is that correct vigraha of Rama? One who gives pleasure to Radha, is that?
Well, it's given in the Vaishnava commentary like that, isn't it? Well, then, on the authority of the Vaishnava, it becomes an authorized meditation. Even though it doesn't satisfy the grammarians, Srinivasa Acharya, whoever told us to meditate on it, meaning that, no problem, we can do it. If someone in the grammar class asks, what's the derivation of the word Rama, then you should give the serious grammatical derivation. From the root Ram, like that, or that. Yes?
The other question I had is that in this 47.3, he says there are countless persons whose hearts are immersed in the contemplation on thousands of scriptural statements like Krishna Bhagavan Swayam.
Yes.
So that means that just only one we have known, and there are thousands of other statements which give the same idea that Krishna is the original person.
Right, but that's not the derivation of the word Krishna.
This is a different topic, yes. I'm asking.
But it's talking about Krishna, yes.
Yeah, so Krishna, we saw in the third chapter of first canto about this verse, Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. There we saw Jiva Goswami's description.
Yes.
So from this it seems that there are many such statements, thousands of such scriptural statements such as Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. That means
there's thousands of different kinds of descriptions of Krishna that use his name.
Not giving the same idea.
No. It's not the same. No, it's also, Krishna and Balaram, went out to herd the cows. Statements like that. They also, by hearing thousands of descriptions of the Supreme Lord using the name Krishna, all different kinds of descriptions, your mind, your heart just becomes, saturated with thought of Krishna. And as soon as you hear anybody say this word Krishna again, it reminds you of Krishna.
So
that's all it's saying.
That's based on the well-accepted fact that Krishna is the original Narayana. So based on that only, he's building up...
Why is it based on the fact that Krishna is the original? It doesn't say that here.
This statement, Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam, is...
But that's just ityadi. That's just a prime example.
It's a philosophical point of...
Yeah, but I don't think he's making the philosophical point here.
Okay.
It's just such statements as that one. But he's not saying that because of what that statement says, therefore this such and such is true. He's not saying that here. He's just giving an example of a statement about Krishna.
Okay.
But, if you hear Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam, and you hear other things that the Bhagavatam says. Krishna's Bhagavatam takes care to say that before it says other things about Krishna. When you hear that, and then when you hear the other things about Krishna, Krishna did this and Krishna did that, and you remember, oh yeah, he's Bhagavan Swayam. And you keep on hearing about Krishna from the authorized source. And yes, it's a primary statement. You hear that first. You're right in the sense that, yes, by understanding, first of all, that Krishna is the absolute Lord, then when you hear other things about him, you'll take it seriously, and it'll make a strong impression in your heart. And then later on, when you just hear the words Krishna, even Sanketyam Parihasyam Var, even just meaning something else or just jokingly, Krishna, you'll think of Krishna immediately.
So he is very clear, Jiva Goswami is very clear that those countless people whom he is referring to, they all understand this verse in the same way as he understood. Is that right?
Which verse?
Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam.
No, it just says that all it's saying is that they heard the verse. They're not talking about what they thought it meant. Okay. You know, maybe some Sri Vaishnav thinks of Krishna as just a generic name for Narayan. Okay? And a Sri Vaishnav reading that Bhagavatam verse may think that it just means Narayan is the Supreme Lord and Krishna still just his avatar. That's okay. Still, that creates an attraction to Krishna, a different kind of attraction, but there's still some attraction.
But according to us, Shukadeva Goswami, Suta Goswami, and all others, they are all having the same idea that Krishna is...
Yeah, okay, but this will be discussed later. This text, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, will be discussed later in the Sandarbhas in more than one place. But we're not getting into... It's not... That discussion is not going on right now. That's for later on. Yes. Krishna Sandarbha is centered around that. Krishna Sandarbha establishes that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, but that's the fourth Sandarbha. Here we're still in the Tattva Sandarbha. We're just talking in general terms. Yes.
I have a question.
This way, those who can't accept that Krishna is and Krishna alone is the original Godhead, they can still follow at least the first Sandarbha. Fourth Sandarbha is for those who are really serious, and you know, even if we lose some of the others who are following us up to that point. Yes?
I have a question on another section, but just since we're discussing the section. Basically, what's being said is that there's countless devotees of Krishna.
There are countless devotees. Well, the people that are being talked about here are devotees of Krishna, yes. Or at least people who are attracted to Krishna.
So there's countless of people that surrender to Krishna. That's basically what he's saying.
What is the predicate here? Well, there are countless people who, for these reasons, as soon as they hear that name Krishna, that's the first thing that comes to their mind. That's the statement here.
Okay. My question is, this is 47.2.
That means that the point he's making is that this is primarily a name referring to a specific person. Okay? Before the word Krishna is anything else. Krishna also is a kind of deer. It's also a color black. You know, the word does have other meanings. But there's many people in the world for whom the word Krishna, first of all, is a name of a particular person. And when they hear Krishna, they don't think first of all about a black deer or about a black anything else. They think about Krishna, the person. All right.
Okay, I have a question.
Yes.
On this 47.2.
Yes.
When it's explaining Sukha Baha. Sukha Moha sorry, I forgot.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The phrase which extinguishes the fire of lamentation, illusion, fear describes a side effect of Prema Bhakti in which even the subtlest trace of inauspicious feelings disappear.
Yes.
And then he quotes Rishabhadeva, but I don't understand the reason. Like, Sri Rishabhadeva affirms this when he says, therefore, until one has love for Lord Vasudev, one is none other than himself, who is none other than myself, Sorry. Okay, I'll repeat this. Therefore, until one has love, has developed. Sorry. Therefore, until one has love for Lord Vasudev, who is none other than myself, one is certainly not delivered from having to accept a material body again and again.
Okay, I think the point being made by introducing this verse by Rishabhdev is that practice of devotional service in the lower stages destroys most of your inertias. Nashti pariyeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. But there are subtle final traces of anartha still remaining. Even in the stage of bhava, only when you achieve prema is the very last trace of anartha gone. And that's what Rishabhdev is saying. That final liberation, actual liberation from the cycle of birth and death, not having to take another birth again, is only guaranteed for someone who has achieved prema. Lower stages of devotional service don't actually guarantee that. I think that's what makes it relevant. Yes, Sarvagyapura.
In this verse quoted from the fifth canto by Rishabhadeva,
yes,
we have a word for bhakti, priti. It's practically not even bhava, it seems to be prema bhakti.
Priti is prema.
Prema.
Yeah,
prema.
So that's it. Yeah. I mean, something less than prema, even bhava, doesn't guarantee liberation. Krishna can save you if he wants to, but you only earn liberation by achieving prema. You're only actually qualified for it. Final liberation, not jivan mukta, but actually not taking birth again.
So we have a few instances when we use this word bhakti. So in first verses, bhakti meant sadhana bhakti, and in this verse, bhakti must mean
sadhya bhakti.
Sadhya bhakti, prema bhakti. Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's 47.2, that's what he says right here. First sentence. Although my translation is wrong, or it got ruined in the editing, whatever. But what it's saying is bhakti here means prema. Because it is achieved by the practice of hearing and so on. Yes. Translation, the first part of the translation up to the comma is wrong.
What is wrong? What should be instead?
Yes, ma'am.
What should be instead of this?
I said, bhakti here means prema. That's going to be the translation up to the comma.
Yes, Bhagavan Prabhu. Of quoting that verse from Rishabhdev here, because he mentions that tasya anushangikam gunamaha, that when bhakti is there, then when bhakti develops, then shoka and gets destroyed. This he describes to be the anushangika guna.
Yes.
And putting that verse, it adds a lot of meaning there, because one thing is that it makes it clear that it's the anushangika guna of this bhakti, when bhakti manifests shoka and so on, go away. But it also puts it in such a way that there's no other way for the shoka and other to go away than bhakti, because Rishabhdev says,
yes,
until a person develops, then it doesn't go away completely. So it adds a lot.
Yes.
It's very nicely fit.
It's not only a cause, it's a necessary cause.
Yeah.
So anything less will not accomplish it. Complete liberation. Okay. Yes.
I guess there is many levels of interpretation of the word priti, which in this quotation of Rishabhadeva is quoted as...
Of course, it's ordinary meanings.
Prema, because in Bhagavad Gita, priti purvakam, that's certainly not prema bhakti being described in that verse, because I give the intelligence to those that are devoted to serving me with love on how to advance.
Jiva Goswami also prefers to understand priti to mean prema. A very obvious place where he does that, where he uses priti to mean prema.
But like in Bhagavad Gita, Tishami.
No, Jiva Goswami.
Yes.
Which?
In Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, the name, not Bhagavad, he didn't write the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna spoke it. We're talking about Jiva Goswami.
Yes, I'm saying the same word is used in Bhagavad Gita.
Oh.
But okay. it seems it's not used in the sense of prema bhakti.
Yeah, just like Rupa Goswami says, what is it? Pritya, the worship of the deity with priti. That's one of the angas. But it doesn't mean you have to have prema. It just means, with affection, with love. It doesn't have to be perfect prema. Just, have a nice feeling for the deity. That's the anga. Even neophytes can try to practice it. Try to serve the deity with love. So that's priti in a lesser sense. But anyway, as you pointed out, this last sandarbha, Jiva Goswami called the priti sandarbha. And there, priti is synonymous for prema, prema bhakti. Okay? So that fixes the meaning, that it's a bona fide meaning, because Jiva Goswami called the whole book by that title, priti sandarbha. Everyone knows it as prema. Just to be fancy, he calls it priti, but that means he considers it synonymous. Actually, what does Rupa Goswami call the rasa? The last rasa? What did he call the bhakti? Nectar devotion has another name for it. I think he uses the term priti. I think in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu also. Priti bhakti. Okay. We will stop unless we have any other further discussion. Anything else? Okay. You can take a few minutes to adjust yourself to the new schedule. Maybe you have some rounds left.
Yes.
Oh, announcements. Yeah, you want to make? Go ahead. Okay, we'll make an announcement and make it again when more devotees are here. Yeah. Go ahead. No, I'm sorry. Okay. Please take this announcement very seriously that Dhammadharpa was going to make now.
This is just last semester we were discussing about Harinam once a month and also yatras trips. So we get a few things that arranged. This Friday, it's Mahulashtami Radhakund. So the idea is that we can leave here. We don't have the fixed times yet. But just as the...
Is that Friday the 2nd?
Yeah, Friday the 2nd.
Okay.
Is that we would go have kirtan on... have Harinam up to Radhakund. And from there, the devotees of Vrindavan will be there. Ayanjo Prabhu will be there. So there we'll be on our own. You can stay for the Ayanjo's kirtan or come back.
What time will we leave here?
Well, we would leave to be enough time, we'll see, it'll be announced later, but the sun goes down early, but we should arrive there before the sunset, so...
You should arrive before 6 o'clock.
Yeah, before 6 o'clock, because it's not recommended to take bath. Is it that they...
It's just a practical thing. Yeah. You can take it... Well, okay. We usually take it before sunset, because it gets very crowded after... by sunset.
Yeah.
Midnight is dangerous. You're risking your life to try to take the bath at midnight.
And Samasavatapur was saying that people will scorn you if you take bath before midnight.
Yeah, but if you do it before sunrise, there's not that many people there. You wait till after sunset. If you wait till after sunrise, there's a big crowd and someone will give you a hard time if you try to take a bath.
So we'll schedule and things in such a way that we arrive there before sunset. So that's it for this Friday, and there's a few other
announcements. He told that appearance of Radhakunda is at midnight, but it doesn't mean that we cannot take bath in the very morning, at next morning. So, and Narjuna Swami and his team, they did it, they just came about 5 o'clock, 5 a.m. After that night, and they took bath. next day it was practically nobody there. It was very free, and still the time of appearance is still extinguished. So okay. I think it's a good option.
Okay, that's a good option. But the Harinam will be
yeah.
that afternoon.
Yeah, the Harinam will be that
the
afternoon.
The second.
Okay, any questions on this subject?
Okay, then...
Then there's the Govardhan Puja. There's different calendars saying different things. Like this one says the 10th, or calendar says the 11th. So we're just going to figure out the exact date, but it's either Saturday or Sunday, and we won't have...
The newcomers may not know that we celebrated across the street from the Bhaktivedanta Ashram. It's organized by the Bhaktivedanta Ashram, big festival. There'll be... Which is first? Anyway, there's a whole program. We have a class.
There's the morning program. Yeah.
And it was a class around 10 o'clock. And then there's Gopuja. Then we go across the street and worship Govardhan. And then there's a feast.
Are we asked to serve again this year?
That's yes. Nobody asked us yet.
Okay. Anyway, so we'll inquire more about this and give the details.
There'll be over 100, 150 devotees here from Vrindavan and elsewhere.
So it's either the 10th or the 11th. And then also for the yatras.
And that's, if it's a weekday, the classes are canceled for that day.
The 10th or the 11th? We'll figure out today and announce tomorrow. Thursday, the 22nd of November. I think this could be your yatra. The Vrindavan Temple is organizing a Vrindakund festival at Vrindakund. So we would just join in. Their group. We would leave here early after Mangalarti to arrive in Vrindavan by 7 o'clock and take the bus. They have buses arranged there to go to the Vrindakund temple. So this is on Dwadasi, the 22nd of November. Okay. Any questions on this? Oh, that's true.
What date? 14th or 15th. I think 15th.
15th. It says you're 14th on this. I forgot to take a look at that. This also will be a day off.
Yes?
That also is a day off.
The day off, and devotees who want to go to Vrindavan to celebrate it there are free too. Those who want to stay here will have a celebration here also.
They also have something at Bhaktivedanta Ashram.
Yeah, we'll probably do it together with them. Yeah. But if all of us stayed, we wouldn't fit in the Bhaktivedanta Ashram.
14th, 14th
Wednesday. Okay, 14th.
Wednesday.
Yes. According to the calendar, but then the schedule says the 10th. Yeah. Okay.
The schedule, as far as I know, is for Dhyanabandhu Parikrama.
Yeah, so it must be the 11th.
They have a special Parikrama, so maybe they have adjusted according to their needs.
Yes, yes. Then the 11th is Saturday?
11th is Sunday. 11th is Sunday.
11th is Sunday, so Sunday. We won't have classes on the 11th.
And 14th is Wednesday.
Is Wednesday?
Yeah.
Of course, that day we won't have classes either. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Tattva Sandarbha Ki Jai.